You're listening to Face Off, episode 24, recorded June 28th, 2009. Welcome to Face Off, your face-to-face web technology podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Jade Robbins.
And I'm Mark Sanborn.
And in this podcast, we like to talk about various aspects of web technology, such as web development, social media, and web entrepreneurship. As always, you can view our show notes at faceoffshow.com or follow us by going to twitter.com/faceoffshow.
All right, what we got this week?
So no news and follow-up, so let's dig right into our web apps. And the first one that we want to talk about this week is called Credit Karma.
What is Credit Karma, Jade?
Credit Karma is a website that lets you get your credit report or your credit score for free and then kind of helps you track it and do certain things to it to see how it affects it. It is free. So initially people start thinking of like freecreditreport.com and things like
those
that.
Suckers. So,
yeah, they're dirty. They caused a lot of trouble. But this site, we've done a lot of research on it. It seems to be a legitimate business. The guy, the CEO, I've read some interviews. He's really, really hep on making consumers more aware of their credit report. And that's really what it does. The essence of it is your credit score is very important. And a lot of people aren't paying enough attention to it. You know, maybe if they're smart, they get their free annual credit report and look at it. But that still is not your credit score.
Right. You always have to be, free places like Free Credit Report have kind of left a bad taste in our mouth when we try to go check our credit report. People, anyways. And so a lot of people are wary about, is this going to affect my score? You know, it looks like this tracks it, all the time. So is it checking it all the time? Is it going to affect my score?
No, you log in and you tell it to check. It doesn't do it automatically because it does cost them money to check it. The way it checks it is one of the problems with Free Credit Report was that it looked like an external check on your credit, which is like if you go to get a loan, an external organization is checking your credit, and that is a mark on your credit, and it can affect it. It can hurt it. It could not hurt it maybe, but if you have enough of them, it can hurt your credit score.
Okay.
But what this does is it actually requests it from, and it only does TransUnion right now, which we'll talk about that later. It's kind of TransUnion is not the best credit score. But it requests it from TransUnion as you. It's saying, I am, Jade Robbins requesting my credit score, so it doesn't hurt your credit. But to do that, normally you'd have to pay.
Okay.
But what this site does is it subsidizes the cost of retrieving your credit score for you by doing offers based on your credit score and, find what information it does have about you.
So
very similar to Mint.
I was just going to say that. Just like Mint, basically.
Yeah. So it's getting your information for you, and it's using, this is a great advertising model. Like I said, I always love Mint because they have information about your finances, and they're selling ads to pay for what they do, but they're selling you ads that are going to help you.
Based on your data.
Yeah, if it looks at your bank and sees that you're getting a 0.5% interest rate on your savings account and they have an offer for someone to give you 2%, that's good. That's helping you out. It's not just another ad that you have to look at. It's saying, hey, I can save you money. And that's what this does too. Its ads and stuff are for things like mortgages and stuff, things that are revolving around your credit score, like things that could help your credit score, or based on your credit score, I can help get you loans at this percentage for this much down and things like that.
I like what these guys are doing. I'm a firm believer of, being able to see your credit score at any time for free. I really like that. Tell me, is it secure? I mean, is it going to affect my score? We kind of said no, but...
I've done a lot of research on this. They've been featured in things like the Wall Street Journal, Bloomberg, New York Times. So, it's a legitimate company. And I'm honestly assuming that if it was featured in really big websites like that, if there was a problem with it, it would have cropped up and become a big deal on the internet. And I searched around. I couldn't find it. There's a lot of what we call like bro science around whether or not it's not good or not. But there was really nothing concrete. And their FAQ is very helpful. It tells you straight up. They say, we avoid hurting your credit score by requesting it as you because of the new laws and older laws involving your credit. If you're requesting your score, it cannot hurt your credit. So, but the caveat to that has always been you have to pay to retrieve your credit score. So like things in the past, like Free Credit Report, they were getting it as an outside entity. They were getting your score, which is helpful, but it was an outside entity, which hurts your score because that way they can get it for, I think, cheaper. Because if someone does an external request, I think it's cheaper or it's free. I'm not sure like if a bank does it, but
also some of the other ones, they would say it would be free. And then in the smaller print, it would say, we're going to start charging you after X amount of days. Exactly. These guys don't do anything.
They straight up say it's free. They don't even have like a free and then a charging model. It's all free. They're subsidizing the cost of retrieving your score by giving you offers and ads that pertain to your credit score. They do also, so one of the problems is it is TransUnion, and a lot of people don't like the TransUnion score. It varies from FICO quite a bit. But what's nice about this system is that you're using the TransUnion score, but you're getting it constantly. So even though it might not be the exact accurate credit score, you can see things like trends or issues that come up because it still has, you know, access to some of the basic financial stuff that's going on. So it might not, you know, some people are logging in and seeing that their TransUnion score is, you know, 200 points less than their FICO score, and they're, you know, really angry about it. But maybe it's not about getting your exact score, but it's about following it and keeping track of it. And like this site has a lot of tools to show you what is affecting your credit score and maybe what you can do to improve it.
Yeah. I mean, as long as you have a baseline and you're seeing the trend of what you had last month versus this month, that's all you need, really.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't need to have the exact score unless you're going to apply for a loan and they're going to, you know, pull a credit check.
They'll pull FICO anyways. They'll probably pull all three. I'm not sure. But
These guys look like they're out to help you. I mean, I'm looking into their blog and they've got some articles about how to avoid scams, how to avoid, you know, mortgage, you know, scams or, you know, things like that. I think they're really out to help.
It's very similar to the Mint business model. I mean, these guys get compared a lot, I think, and it's very similar. Mint, it's, you know, again, they're trying to give you useful ads based on the information that you're using with them. But around that, you know, Mint loves money. Their blog is so helpful. They talk about all kinds of stuff. You know, the economy as a whole, your individual financial information. And these guys are doing the same thing. It's not, they're not just going out and scraping links off all these websites and putting out really generic content. They're really creating good content that's supposed to help you.
Yeah. And I mean, if you think about it, everything that you buy, you know, big purchases are all based on your credit score. Why can't you see it all the time? Why do you have to be, hidden by this score? I mean, we should be able to see
it's really silly. I believe you should be able to see it for free, and this achieves that. But I also think that the reporting agencies really need be some legislation there to stop that, because if this is so important to your life that you really, there should not be barriers for you to see it,
not
and
at
to follow
all
it. So you know, typical use case, I signed up for it again. I was kind of leery because one thing they do ask when you sign up is they ask for your social security number. They don't store it, but what they do is they use that for sort of a one-time verification to make sure that the account you're signing up for is the person that they're going to be retrieving the credit score for. They don't want me to sign up and say, I'm Mark Sanborn, and get your credit score. So, but they don't store it. After they use it to verify it's you, it's gone. It's not saved.
Well, I mean, that's a good thing. I mean, because otherwise I would be able to see your credit score and maybe get, you know, information about your debt and things like that.
Exactly, and that's just personal information. So,
Is that the only criteria that you have to give? I mean, it's just a
Besides basic information, I think like your address and stuff. Okay. And you answer some questions about like you have a debt with one of these three banks. Which one is it really?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, some stuff like that. When you get your credit report, you answer the same kind of questions.
Yeah.
But you sign up. I was really leery and I did it, and I've been checking on it and I think it's good. So I sign in and the first thing I want to do is I go to my credit report card, which I think is really the meat of what's helpful.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to share some personal information. I'm not super proud of my credit score, but it's not terrible either. So one of the things that's really affecting my credit score right now is my open credit card utilization, which is the amount of credit I've been issued and versus how much I've used.
Okay.
So right now, on my credit cards, I'm technically using 41% of my available credit, which is bad. So I have a C letter grade for that. So obviously, pay off your credit cards. I need to pay off my credit cards. I need to clean that up. Good. Okay. I have a grade A for percent of on-time payments, 100%. I always pay my bills on time. And they give you like a little blurb about how this affects your credit too.
Okay, so it kind of gives you an idea of what things you can actually help. Like if you were to pay down on this credit card, you'd have a start getting a better score maybe.
Yeah, they actually have another tool. So after you do your credit report, you can go to their tools, which has this sort of thing where it has your credit score. Mm-hmm. And you can go through these different scenarios and say what you want to do. And they'll give you kind of a good guess as to how it will affect your credit score. So like I went in there and I said, what if I paid off all my credit card debt?
Oh, cool.
Well, my credit score, they said they estimate would jump about, you know, 40 to 50 points up.
Okay.
Which is really helpful.
That is very helpful. I've always wondered, is it the case if I switch credit card companies, you know, often, like to get better rates, better deals or whatever, mm-hmm. would that affect it? And it would be great to, you know, use a tool like that that would show me that.
Yeah. Or like right here, one of the really things that's hurting my credit score is my average age of open credit lines. I mean, I'm 26 years old. You know, I opened like a new account a couple months ago, and the oldest account I have is like a cell phone or something like that. I don't have very old accounts, and that really hurts my credit because I don't have like a lot of loans. Yeah, I don't have a mortgage or a car mm-hmm. loan or anything like that. So you know, and some of these things seem counterintuitive, but the great point about this is you can go in, you can play with it, and say like, okay, what if what if I intend to open another credit card with a credit limit of $5,000, how will that affect my credit score? Will it go up or down? I mean, you know, naturally you kind of think, well, that might make your credit score go down because you have more possible debt. But then, no, okay, it makes it go up because it's saying that someone else trusts you with credit. So who knows?
Yeah. I mean, it looks like they offer, it's more of a community thing. Like they have a Twitter account, they've got blog articles that you can vote up. It's when we talk about web apps, they're basically doing everything we talk about that's yeah, good to do. You know,
exactly.
Have that social community, give the users a voice, mm-hmm. let them vote, let them communicate with you on Twitter.
Mm-hmm. And the CEO who started this too, he worked for a credit card company before he started this. So, I mean, and part of one of his things he did, if I remember correctly, correct me if I'm wrong, was he worked on their software for developing whether or not to offer people credit based on their credit scores and their history and stuff like that. So he knows what he's doing.
Okay.
It's not just some guy who's like, I want to start a company.
I want to start a web app.
Yeah, so
So he knows the logistics of the score and what it affects and how it affects, and so, okay.
Exactly. I mean, it's even really helpful just to see. My credit card used to give me my FICO score for free, which was really cool. And then they stopped that now because of the credit crunch. So it's kind of hard to see. It was really nice because they did a little graph of sort of your credit score over the past year. Well, this does that now. If I log in, you know, even once a month, update my score, I can see a trend. Currently my credit score is going up. That's great. You know, or if it goes down, I want to say, okay, well, what happened? Why did my credit score go down? I want to figure that out.
Yeah. Now, I think what you mentioned earlier when we were talking, you said there was some statistics that they keep, you said something about Montana and the average credit score. Can you talk about that a little
bit? Yeah, if you go to their tools and calculators, they also do a bunch of different data aggregation and stuff, which is really cool. If you go to tools and calculators and go to like credit trends, like you can click on state trends, and I can see like where I compare with the average credit score in my state. So like, in Montana, the current average credit score is 667. So technically, I'm much above average of the rest of my state, which I don't know what that tells you. Does that mean I'm more likely to get a loan in this state than them or not? I don't know. But I love DataViz and look and things like that. So
it's interesting to look at the United States and see which states have poor credit scores in general.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's almost like the Midwest and the southern states really take a hit. Another one is average score by age. So like the average score for a person that's 25 to 34 is about 652. So, I mean, technically I'm doing a lot better than the average person my age. The average person who's 55 and plus is 724.
Wow.
I mean, it's just funny to see kind of the curve go up mm-hmm. of age. Like the older you get, your credit gets a lot better. So, I mean, while maybe one of my bad credit markers is that my average age of my accounts isn't a whole lot, but that's a lot. I can't control a whole lot of that either. I shouldn't go open a bunch of new accounts right now just to have older accounts anyways.
Yeah.
But it's really designed to help you monitor your credit. It is a TransUnion score, so it's not like your perfect score that your bank is probably going to go grab. But it is a score, and you can trend it and watch it and see what's happening. And they'll help you figure out how to make it better.
I like that. And I really like the fact that you can use tools and do hypothetical scenarios. Like, let's say if I want to cancel this credit card and get this one because it gives me miles or something. Is mm-hmm. that going to affect my credit score?
Yeah.
You know, I want to know that question.
Yeah, exactly. So that's cool. So one of them we can do, where is it? I can't find it now. They have like a whole bunch of calculators and stuff, home affordability calculator, like, you know, for a loan amount with X interest over the number of years, you know, how much can I get in a house? You know, what kind of house can I get into? You know, debt repayments, amortization rates and stuff. Very useful. I think these guys, I'll have to find the interview and we'll link to it in the show notes. But the CEO of this really believes that consumers need to know what's going on with their money. And I agree with that completely. I think so many people think that money management is a passive thing that they do. You know, it's like you go to work for 8 days and the rest of the stuff just kind of happens the way it does. But if you actively manage your money, you can really, really lessen your troubles in life.
Yeah. And I like the philosophy that you can check your credit score all the time. I mean, this website's great, but I wish they would just, you know, do some legislation or something. They would just open exactly. it up because yeah. it's kind of ridiculous.
Yeah, it's a pain, that's for sure.
This helps. It alleviates some of the pain, but most of the pain, really. And so I think it's a great app.
Yep. It is creditkarma.com. All right, so for our next app, we're going to talk about Super, which is SU.PR by the folks that did StumbleUpon. Mark, what is Super?
Okay, well, a lot of you guys that are on Twitter, you know, you'll see these short domain things like tinyurl or bit.ly, you know, and they'll have some, you know, numbers.
We talked about Kligs and Kligs, yep. another one, Trim.
These short URLs are a way of, you know, shortening down a URL to use in services that limit characters. Like Twitter, you only have 140 characters, so you can't be put in this humongous domain URL. Now, it started off with tinyurl. You've got those domains, and it was nice, but it looks like we're getting more and more features with these things. And what Super is it's a short URL service like the rest of them, but it's got analytics that you're starting to see more of that trend. Kligs, mm-hmm. we talked about Kligs and we were really impressed by that, but now it seems like they're all doing it.
Yeah, exactly.
But StumbleUpon, what they have is it automatically stumbles it, or, you know, to use it as a verb. StumbleUpon is a service kind of like Dig, you know, where you can submit articles, and if they're popular, they get thumbs up for you. So by doing a short URL with them, it automatically registers them for that database. So that's really nice. You can schedule you can actually tweet from there, so you don't have to, you know, yeah. copy and paste and go over, and, you know, and you can even schedule it for a later time if you're gonna, you know, post your article at 5 a.m. and you want to just tweet it. Mm-hmm. And actually, while I'm talking about time, sometimes it's often better to tweet it at a certain time of day, depending on your topic.
Yeah, you and I have looked at this, and apparently later in the afternoon, generically, of course, later in mm-hmm. the afternoon is a good time to tweet to get retweets.
Right. And what this does is it's going to be different for everybody. Everybody's articles, you know, is different, and depending on your culture, your language. Like if you've got a international blog, you know, you might not do it in the later afternoon. You might find a time that's better for you. what this does is it'll actually, based on your traffic in the past, URLs you put in this, the better it's going to have data aggregation.
Yeah, exactly.
But what it's going to do is it's actually going to, based on your data you've got in here, is it's going to suggest a posting time to tweet this out that's going to be the most retweeted or the most viewed.
Yeah.
You know,
so it's really cool. It goes back, you put in some of your sites that you will be promoting through this account. And so, like, you know, Face Off Show has had some stumbles. Montana Breakfast has had some stumbles. So when you haven't done any of the posts yet on there, it snags and sort of aggregates what it can from StumbleUpon already.
Oh, so you go back in time and look at exactly. some of those. That's really handy then.
So, I mean, it's, you know, I mean, you and I just signed up for it, so we really don't have a lot of stuff in there. And so it kind of seems like a silly baseline. But at least it tries, so you don't just kind of start with this blank slate of absolutely no information at all.
Yeah. Now, what I like about this is, I mean, you can track your stumbles and your tweets in one spot. You know, Kligs will tell you how many retweets you got and how many people are looking at the link and clicked on the link. But this, I mean, it has all that information, plus, you know, whether people stumble it or not.
StumbleUpon can bring major traffic to your website. We've found this out a lot.
What I'm trying to say is, if you're trying to promote your site, this is one less step. If you just use this short URL, it's one less step. You don't have to stumble it.
Exactly.
If you're looking for that kind of traffic.
Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah.
I guess my favorite feature is the suggested posting time based on previous results. I think that's really cool.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, we've looked into it and to see what time is the best time to tweet something out in that has the most chance of getting retweeted. This kind of takes some of that work out for you and will actually tell you.
Yeah, and the guys at StumbleUpon do good work. I think it was held back for a long time because it was only a Firefox browser plugin. But now that they've kind of done a, and we've talked about how much we don't like these, but the little sort of iframe stumble ability at the top, I mm-hmm. think it's going to open up to a lot more people. And they've done a great job of bringing in Facebook and Twitter and StumbleUpon into this mix. I think it's really cool. I really like Kligs, but I think it's going to be time for Jaders to move on to a new one.
I should also mention that they not only do Twitter but Facebook status updates.
Yep.
They have
now if they add ping.fm. Would
Ping add them, or they would have to add?
They have to add support to post to Ping.
Okay.
So if they added support to post to Ping, then
it could go to all the different feeds.
It would go everywhere. It would go to my Yammer. It would go to my Facebook. It would go to my everything.
They have an API, so if you've got an app that you're developing, it would be nice to see this in TweetDeck. They probably will add it eventually. They've got a browser bookmarklet, so if you're using Firefox, you can just drag it up in there and use it in your browser.
Mm-hmm. Very impressed.
That's about it. I mean, it's it's simple, but that's what we like, you know.
Yeah, it's easy simple, to use and clean, helpful. Good graphs. The interface. I mean, one of the things I always liked about I didn't like about Kligs is it didn't have that smooth interface that I really like. I mean, the StumbleUpon guys, they always have really great graphic design. It looks good. I'm definitely a fan. The one thing I was kind of wondering is, it's hard for us right now because I haven't done anything in it yet. I mean, we signed up and we've looked at it, but we're going to have a lot better data after we, start putting in some face-off stuff into it, or I'll start throwing some Montana Fragfest stuff into it, but very cool.
We've talked about user voice in the past to get feedback of your customers, and it looks like they use that. And I clicked on it to see kind of what people are talking about it, and they kind of want they're looking for the most voted up feature that people are looking for is multiple Twitter accounts, which I thought was pretty interesting.
It makes sense for people like me and you. I mean, I would use this all day if I didn't have to switch it all the time. If I could just post stuff to Jade Robin or to my regular Twitter account. And then with, let's say two clicks of the mouse, uncheck all the other ones and just check the face-off Twitter account. That'd be great. It'd be in one place. Right now it's like my Kligs are just all face-off stuff because I don't want to put anything else in it.
Or it's just a kind of a mix or something. But
yeah.
It'd be nice to kind of separate, especially in something like this, it'd be kind of nice to separate face-off's data to your own article's data.
Yeah.
You don't want them mashed up together.
Yeah.
Or you'll get inaccurate suggested posting times and things like that.
I agree. So. All right, so that is super, very cool. So the next web app we want to talk about is it's called the Netalyzer, but it's really hard to find. It's kind of done through Berkeley's website and stuff. So really, go to the link in the show notes.
Yeah, check out the show notes for the URL.
It's called Netalyzer, and what it does is they say it debugs your internet. So what it does is you go in and you click, the start analysis, it loads a little Java applet, and then what it does is it does all kinds of like little tests and aggregations and whatnot of your internet service provider that you're on right now and spits out like a little report for you so you can see what's going on.
Now, when you first posted this, I was just absolutely excited about this because I, for whatever reason, I'm always stuck with some, not so good internet service at some point. I bounce around from internet service, whether it's me, moving towns or whatever. I'm always stuck with some,
shoddy
internet service.
Yeah.
And I'm always like, what are they doing? So this report is very, very in depth about what is going on exactly with your packets.
Yeah. I'm really surprised at stuff they can find out. Some of the red marks I have from my internet provider is, direct UDP access to remote MSSQL servers, port 143 is blocked. And then they even give you a little explanation. Like, this is most likely due to a filtering rule against the slammer worm.
Cool.
That's helpful.
So I guess we should explain what it exactly is doing. It's basically a benchmark for your ISP. What is your ISP doing with your packets? Are they, slowing them down, blocking them.
Yeah. Like, let's say you're trying to do something, which you and I often do as you know, doing programmers, we're trying to do goofy little things with Linux or something like yep. that. And you're like, you can't figure out why it's not working. Mm-hmm. And you're starting to suspect that maybe it's your connection to the outside world. Well, you would go to this and do it, and then you can look through and find the stuff that may be a culprit. Like, one thing I did notice, and this kind of brings it up now, and it's something I might want to think about for the future, was that whenever I'm doing any sort of uploading, like when I'm uploading the show or anything like that, I mean, really, the rest of my internet just dies. It is almost unusable. And this is because, apparently, the network buffer for upload on my internet service provider is really high. Okay. And they say you might produce, you know, you might see delays when you're uploading intensively.
So this buffer, when you're uploading, you've got basically a line, and your packets have to wait when you're down. When you're uploading something.
I think
something,
so. Okay. I think it's something like that, you know, so that if it has such a big buffer that when I make a request like view a website, it kind of gets put in the back of the stack and then gets processed, where it, instead of just, you know, making it faster, they decide to put a buffer in so it seems faster. I don't know, but I definitely do know that when I'm doing real uploading, the rest of my internet does take a 100% tank in the pants. It's just not good at all.
All right. Yeah. I mean, it shows like what ports are blocked. If you've got any, it looks like you've got a certain UDP port blocked mm-hmm. for, it looks like it says anyway, it's most likely blocked because of the slammer worm. Mm-hmm. Maybe the worm takes advantage of that.
It noticed that I'm using OpenDNS by default. And like, so it points out that, you know, if I go to a URL that's a 404, it's like, just so you know, it's not going to that actual URL. It's doing like a man in the middle sort of search, which is how OpenDNS monetizes, and I understand that. But someone might not know that. And you know, maybe they think they have a worm on their computer that's doing that as opposed to their DNS. Well, now
that's a great point. I mean, if you suspect you have adware or spyware or something on your computer, some kind of a malware, and you think it's mucking with your traffic, you know, check this out app yeah, out. I mean, exactly. It's not necessarily your ISP that's blocking some of this stuff.
Yeah. Exactly.
It's just your connection in general. So, you know, you could have had a worm that set your DNS to something mm-hmm. other than what it was supposed to be, exactly. And it would detect that.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, it could be some weird DNS server in China that they're running so that they can...
So when you go to PayPal.com, it's actually China's PayPal.
Yeah, exactly. And that's literally a man-in-the-middle attack. You would have no idea. Mm-hmm. You know, according to your computer, according to everything you're doing, you're at PayPal.com, and they could be putting up a spoof PageGate information. That's a great point. It's just, you know, it's a lot of technical information. One of the other cool things I really like that they do is that once you get a report, you can just save that link and send it out to people. Like when we were talking, you know, you didn't have Java loaded on your computer and you were like, well, I'm going to have a hard time talking about this. I can't see a report. And I was like, well, no, here's the link to my report. You don't have to run the test every time. It keeps the report. It keeps it time stamped. It has some information on it at the top.
This would be, I mean, that's a good point that you can actually find this public URL. You can, you know, you can have, if you're help troubleshooting, you know, a family member's computer yep. and, you know, they run it and you're like, send me the URL when you're done running it. Yeah, so exactly. You can go in here and check it out and be like, oh man.
Because it would do you no good to run it from where you are.
Right. So then you could look at it and say, you know what, I think you might have a worm because your DNS traffic's going some goofy place mm-hmm. or something like that.
Or just maybe if you want some ammo to go back to your ISP and say, you know, this is not good. I don't think you're doing a good enough job. Here are all the red flags that this app showed me.
I'm actually now on decent internet, but before I was on a really bad internet. It was going through I didn't have a public IP or anything. I was behind this NAT.
Yeah, that was hairy internet.
It would be really interesting to look at this to go back after and that. See that. So
it's called the ICSI Netalyzer. Go and check out and see what your ISP is doing, because maybe one of the problems you think is your computer might actually be them.
Yep.
All right. So the last little web app that we want to talk about this week is called Noam. Mark, what is Noam?
Okay. So Noam, we hear a lot in the news about... you know, celebrities' names being taken on Twitter, and, you know, because the celebrities are the, well, sometimes the last person to finally get on Twitter, really. There's some technologically advanced celebrities on right now, but, you know, Oprah finally got on. And what this does is it allows that, you know, anybody really to go and search your name and find out who's got the registered name for whatever, you know, username on, like, all these services, there's like 100 of them, 120.
Yeah, I use the same username for everything, and yeah. I have for the past, you know, 5-6 years.
So for example, like I share a name with a famous public speaker, Mark Sanborn.
Mm-hmm.
If I want to go in here, I would type in Mark Sanborn and it would show me, you know, if Mark Sanborn's on LinkedIn or Facebook or, and it would show me if I could, if the name is available, if I can go register it real quick or if he's already got it, you know, yeah. or
man,
what.
They have a lot of services on here. I honestly have not heard of half of these things.
Well, so I just typed in Mark Sanborn and pretty much everything's available, but, you know, somebody's already got a Blogger, eBay,
mm-hmm.
which is not me.
Yeah, I did mine that I always do. And, it's good to, you can go through and see which ones, you know, are you like Reddit. That's me, you know, last.fm. That's me. But then WeGossip is not available. That's not me.
Uh-huh.
What is WeGossip?
YouTube is, that one's not me. It's probably the public speaker, Mark yeah. Sanborn. But there's looks like a lot of them are available.
Yeah. Which is, I mean, we joke about this a lot. We think that public speaker guy really hates you because you have like everything Mark Sanborn because you're an early adopter of the internet and mm-hmm. he is not at all. Right. But he is more famous.
I do try to... You know, if somebody Twitters me and says, you know, and it's obviously they're talking about the other Mark Sanborn, I will point them in the right direction.
Yeah, you get a lot of Follow Friday requests, people saying, oh, follow Mark Sanborn, public speaker. He's great.
Like, he's got some good quotes.
You're like, ah, oh, that's not me, just so you know. I actually share a name with a not so famous pornography actress, which is depressing. Because if you do a Google search for Jade Robbins, you'll get first result is me, which I'm happy about. But then the search one, the third one is an IMDb profile for Jade Robbins, which has like three adult films.
Oh,
so
geez.
It's kind of embarrassing. That's not me. If you find the films, I swear those are not me.
Okay, so what I think this is going to be helpful for our listeners is if you're trying to build up a brand and you want your username to be consistent across all these services, you might want to tweak your username so it's the same to where you can get, you know, where all these availables are going to be for all the popular services. So, for example, if your name is, you know, Bob Smith and you can't get it and it's pretty much taken on everything, you might want to change a little bit.
Yeah,
so you can have a consistent username.
Yeah, like you know, Internet Bob or something. I mean, you know, if you,
there you go.
You know, so like one of the things, you know, I did, I looked for, you and I tend to just sign up with our own usernames and passwords for stuff we talk about on the show, but I did one for Face Off, and Face Off was, there was a lot that weren't available, but I did Face Off Show, which is kind of what we've done for our branding, and it's almost available, green light across the board. So, I mean, that's a great idea, like you said, to tweak your brand name maybe so that, you know, so you can avoid people thinking you're not who you are.
And then go ahead and try to get as many of them as you can, at least the ones that are useful.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of these things. I've never even heard of them.
Oh, my. Yeah. Like, I'm not going to sign up for half of these.
Like,
but I will look at some of them for this little podcast that I host called Face Off. That's for sure.
I mean, there's definitely useful ones. Technorati, Ustream, YouTube,
oh, yeah.
WordPress.
There's a lot of big ones. There's a lot of small
Facebook,
ones.
Dig.
Rever,
eBay.
Odeo. I used to use Odeo a lot.
So
check it out, knowem.com. Make sure your names are available in places. And then I think, let me check here. If you click
that's
on.
That's crazy how fast that works.
What's cool is you click on the available part and it takes you to the new user sign up for that site.
And
right there.
Automatically put your name and things in? Or?
No, but oh. It just takes you to, the, you know, if you're like.
Oh, still, that's good.
You're like, oh, I better register that.
I get it.
Exactly. So check it out, knowem.com.
What we don't condone, though, is going name squatting.
Don't name.
Don't
yeah,
that.
Why would you name squat? That's just such a pain in the butt. I don't know why anyone would do that.
But if you are Bob Smith, go get your name.
Get on it. Go, Bob. Go, go, go.
All right. That about does it for our web apps. If you have a web app that you really like, send it in. Let us know. Email us. Put it on Twitter. Comment. Also, if you have a web app that you're developing or want to promote, give us an email and we'll check it out and maybe get you on the show or something and talk about it.
Yeah. All right, so our topic for this week, one of the topics we talk about a lot is entrepreneurship. And so there's a lot of resources out there to make yourself a better entrepreneur. But we have a couple that we want to talk about. So, Mark, what are some of the things that you think make a real successful entrepreneur?
Passion.
About I agree.
What you're, yeah, I mean, if you don't have passion, you're probably not going to put in the hours it takes to succeed, really. Yeah. I think you're going to need to know how to communicate with people effectively, whether it's going to be voice or in your writing, follow through. I mean, a lot of people, you know, have great ideas, but they don't follow through with it.
Yeah. And I mean, I guess I want to sort of disclaim this segment. I don't really consider myself a successful entrepreneur. I'm not like trying to say that, you know, these are what we do and this is what makes it better. A lot of it, like you said, is follow through. You can do a lot of these things. I've started several projects and I haven't followed through. And I think on a couple of them, had I made sure I followed through, which requires passion, like you mentioned, mm-hmm. You know, they would have been a lot more successful.
I also should say the disclaimer too. I don't have anything majorly successful right now. I'm trying. I've worked on several projects. Another thing I wanted to mention though is, and this, I don't hear this very often, is know when to quit.
Yeah.
A lot of people get too passionate about something, mm-hmm. and it's either the idea was not quite there yet. Like Gary Vaynerchuk said in one of his videos, like, you know, like you have to have passion and stuff, but it's something like his example was he wanted to be like a football star.
Yeah. On quarterback.
The Jets. Yeah. And you know, he would love that and he's passionate about it. I'm sure he would put as many hours as humanly possible to do it, but it's just not going to happen.
It's not going to happen.
And I think sometimes you need to realize that sometimes the project is either not quite there yet and you might want to consider doing something else. One of my examples would be is marksanborn.net. It was too fragmented, too mm-hmm. many articles, and really, to be honest, I don't think it would have ever gone anywhere, even if I put in, you know, my heart and soul in many, many hours.
Yeah, I mean, you need to be smart about what you're doing, and so you have to think, I mean, you'd like to think that there's going to be some people like you out there, but not if you want to really, and again, it depends on how you define success. I mean, I'm not a successful entrepreneur in that I don't have a 9-to-5 job or anything like that. But as far as, you know, the products that and the things that I'm working on, I feel I'm successful about. Like this podcast is a great example. You and I are very dedicated to it. And, you know, while we don't have, you know, we're no
huge income.
Yeah, exactly. Stream. There's not an income stream. I think that thus, as far as it is right now, it's very successful.
I would agree with that. Definitely. Money is not always the object in being successful. But the reason, like for Mark Sanborn, I ended up basically making a new blog that I thought had a much better future. Mm-hmm. So, and that, I guess that was my point.
Yeah, but yeah. Another great example is there's a show called like American Inventor or something like that, and there's this guy who had a game he called Bullet Ball, and what it basically was table hockey with a ball in sort of like an octagonal shape, but you used your hands, and I mean this guy basically he lost his wife, he lost his life savings putting it all into this bullet ball. He's the most passionate guy I've ever seen. But he didn't know when to quit. It's just a product that cannot be successful. And so he lost his life and still is out there pushing for this game that will never, ever, ever, ever take off. And so he doesn't. I mean, you want to tell people, like, follow your dreams, follow your passion, and it will just come to you. But sometimes it just doesn't. So, you know, I mean, like, my definition of successful is I want to be my own boss someday. I want to quit my job and I want to invest all my work time into things that will bring income to me, whether it's a ton of income or just enough income that I can live my life the way I am right now without working for someone else. Define your success. You know, like I said, success for me will be when I'm my own boss. But that I don't really want to make millions and billions of dollars. I don't want to be the next Bill Gates.
I also think another attribute that's, you know, that I see a lot in entrepreneurs is planning. You know, some people will say, I want to have this successful blog and all this stuff. And they'll just get to work and they'll work and never actually say, you know, I want in 6 months, I want to have this and I want the vision. Basically, a lot of these entrepreneurs have this vision and they basically just work to until the reality is the vision that he had.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of that is the planning. It's like, this is what I want it to look like. What's it going to look like when it is actually totally successful?
Yeah.
And then shoot for that and keep going and working towards that.
Like I've said this before, but with Montana Fragfest, I didn't plan to think that out enough. It's very similar to marksanborn.net. I never really thought, I didn't define what I wanted to do with it. I thought, well, I'm going to put a blog up and I'm going to talk about gaming. But then I thought, well, I mean, what is my goal? Is my goal to create a community of gamers from Montana, or is my goal to eventually sell enough advertisements and bring enough value to my community that I can, you know, again, be my own boss? Well, what is that? My model thus far doesn't support one of those goals. It doesn't support monetization. It supports building a community. Okay, well, what do I need to do? And maybe I should refocus my efforts on that to do what I really want to do. And now it's to the point of I'm thinking, well, if it's really going towards building a community that I can't make money at, then maybe I should just keep going that way and not worry about making money or monetization, you know, and just say, okay, well, this is something I'm going to do to give back to the internet instead of, you know, trying to make it a sustainable business model.
Yeah, absolutely. It's actually a really good point. I mean, you got to look at the things like, do you have enough market to make what your goal? I mean, do you have enough people in Montana to sustain a, you know, a viable business in that, you know, industry or field?
Exactly. Or for example, I think the field of gamers, especially gamers locally here in this area, whatnot, are, for lack of a better term, too cheap to spend money. There's just, I mean, gamers are very smart. They buy their computer parts off of Newegg, which is very cheap. So I couldn't sell parts to gamers in Montana. Okay. So that, you know, that idea is out the window. Could I charge for articles? Well, no one would ever pay for articles, especially gamers. That would just be stupid. Okay. So what am I going to do next? Mm-hmm. And it's to the point of, well, okay, well, maybe I don't think I can really make money off of that, especially with the saturated market the way it is. You know, what makes a gamer in Montana different from any other gamer on the internet as far as news and reviews goes? Nothing.
Just the location, basically.
Yeah, there's not games in Montana that don't have any. I mean, the only real thing that happens is maybe LAN parties, which I think are starting to slow down across the nation. Okay, maybe I could do an event or something. But it's just the goals don't match. What I'm doing and what I want are sort of in conflict with each other, and I need to refocus that and think about how I want to go.
Yep. So yeah, that's, you know, got to kind of know when to quit and kind of know when to refactor, I guess.
Mm-hmm. And you again, know, like you said, planning, building, even yep, if it's planning, a business yep. plan, that, you know, even if I build a business plan for Montana Fright Fest with the goal of not making money at it, that's a plan and that's a focus that I can go back to and I can alter in the future if I want to, but I can go back and have that written sort of record of where I want it to go and what I want to do. And if I feel like I'm drifting, I can go back to that and refocus and say, all right, this is what I need to do with this, and this is what I want to do, so I need to, you know, look at this and refocus.
Yep. Maybe it's not time to quit. Maybe you just need to tweak a few things. Sounds like.
Again, so here's another thing I think with successful entrepreneur is patience. You're not, you and I talk about this a lot. We kind of really, I've drank the Gary Vaynerchuk Kool-Aid. He talks about a lot of these a lot. He says, have patience. You know, he did Wine Library TV for, you know, 6 months with like 10 subscribers. You know, and I mean, he kept with it. He was very passionate about it. Like you said, he kept going, and now it's really brought a lot of business to his other business as well. So there's another good idea. Montana Fragfest, maybe I should be smart and use that to leverage another business making idea. A lot of websites are doing this where they offer free stuff, which is basically just a portfolio item for other work that they want to do. Contract work or just other applications that they want to pay for. So if people really like Montana Fragfest, they could say, oh, what other stuff is this Jade Robbins guy done? Oh, this site, that's cool. Maybe I would pay for that, or maybe I would, you know, enjoy advertising from that site.
Yeah, that's a very good point. A lot of these services that are free, you know, they don't really add value and be like, well, why would you do that? But then later on they launch some major project, and because they had that recognition of that free thing that it was just great.
Exactly.
They can do more things, like, you know, so.
Yeah, they have a lot more, you know, like Montana Fragverse builds my personal brand value up so that people do recognize me. And then if I ever do launch something that I fully intend to monetize and make money off of, they say, well, Jade Robbins did this. And, you know, he obviously took a lot of planning, a lot of careful, you know, analysis of this. So, you know, he probably did the same for this other product and I should trust him a little bit more.
Yeah. You see a lot of success stories of blogs where they have a successful blog, but then they make another one in a different category, you know, different field that's totally unrelated. And it's like an instant success the next day because they leveraged their mm-hmm. older blog. They like posted, hey, check out my new one.
Yeah, I mean the Tuts network.
Oh, there's a lot.
You know, they started with Net Tuts, and then they've gone off to like PSD Tuts, Vector Tuts, Audio Tuts.
I actually think PSD was the first.
Was PSD? Oh, okay.
I could be wrong on that. No, that was the first one. I know NetTuts was after PSD.
Okay. But. So, I mean, but they leverage those in. So, in NetTuts, every once in a while, they'll put an article like, if you're doing, you know, vector tutorial, you're doing vector stuff for your other websites, check out Vector Tuts. And then they have like the also a monetization model of free articles. But if you want, you know, the full suite, if you want the example files and whatnot, then, you know, you have to pay for a subscription. You're good to go.
Another example, I guess, is, you know, blogging by yourself. Can you produce enough content to compete with some of these sites that have multiple bloggers, you know, 10 bloggers? You got to look at the reality sometimes. Can you create quality content daily to the point where, like, some of these, like Lifehacker does multiple articles a day?
Yeah.
You've got to know what your competition is doing. Well, that's a good point, too, is knowing what your other people in your industry are doing.
Yeah, exactly. Like, again, I didn't think Montana Fragfest threw enough. I can't do gaming news without really, really investing a lot of time because there are these big news networks out there. They're getting all the scoops ahead of time. They're getting all the exclusives. You know, I won't have that one piece of news that no one else has first. I'll always be referencing someone else's stuff. Well, why should you go to Montana Fragfest for that when you could go to Kotaku or you could go to, you know, any of those other ones that will have it before me and probably doing a better job? That's a saturated market that I shouldn't hop into. You know, and I didn't think about that when I started Montana Fragfest because now it's like, okay, I need to come up with original content periodically enough to bring people coming in and then figure out how to get money out of it. That wasn't very well thought out at all, Jade. So, we have a couple sort of the little list post articles that we kind of go through each item on about being a successful entrepreneur and other reasons that you might not be a successful entrepreneur. So let's kind of hit those and see what we can find. The first one of common character, this article is 25 common characteristics of successful entrepreneurs. Number one is do what you enjoy. I mean, you talked about earlier. You have to be passionate about it. And make sure your passion is sustainable. If, you know, like I said, Montana Fragfest, we started it, we were really into Team Fortress 2. And then after that, for a couple months, it really kind of died down and I stopped playing games. I was focusing on doing programming and things like Face Off. Well, that passion wasn't sustainable. I'm finding out now that web technology is a passion that is very sustainable. I've been interested in it for, you know, 6 years now and I'm still am, and it doesn't really slow down. That's a good thing to do. Like this podcast, it's a good thing to be passionate about.
Number two says, take what you do seriously. I remember when we first started this podcast, I was kind of reluctant to tell people that I do what do you even call it? A radio show online or a podcast. Exactly. And I was kind of, I wouldn't say I was embarrassed, but I was kind of like, I don't know, if I should even tell people I'm doing this. Should I advertise it? Should I tweet it out and things? Mm-hmm. And then I got to think, you know, if I don't take it serious, no one's going to take me serious.
That's a great point. Exactly.
So basically, take it seriously. One of the episodes we had a disaster and lost one of the recordings and we had to record it. And then we were so flustered that we messed up the recording. And finally we said, you know, if we're going to be serious about this, we got to just do it and get it done and get it out on Tuesday, you know? And since then we've got a backup solution in a lot of things. So
yeah, exactly. I mean,
we're taking it serious.
Yeah, exactly. It started off almost kind of not serious. We did just one recording as a joke, but then I kind of remember the discussion we had where we said, okay, well, I mean, do we want to go 100% on this? Because we need to go 100% or not at all.
Right.
And if, like you said, that's a great point. If you don't take it seriously, why should anyone else take you seriously? Because, I mean, they can tell. You can smell that, you know, I'm not really investing all my time in this stink.
One of the things that is not on the list, but I'd like to mention is always be trying to improve and not, as long as you're improving and moving forward, never backwards. Like if we were to have that same backup error thing happen again, I would be really embarrassed. We learn from our mistake. Now we have a backup solution. We're always moving forward. You just purchased a new microphone where, you know, mm-hmm. the shows get, you know, I hope at least has more sound quality. You know, we're doing things better and better. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, I mean, and again, take it seriously. Like I could have spent that, you know, whatever amount of money I spent on my microphone, I could have spent that on, you know, beer. I could have spent it on more computer equipment or not. But, you know, I thought
a
new mouse, keyboard. I love mice and keyboard for the record. I love peripherals. But no, I said, you know, you invested a good chunk of money into good high quality recording equipment for our show. I need to do the same. I need to take it seriously because I need to improve and do better. So I said, all right, well, instead of buying computer parts or anything like that, I bought recording equipment.
And then when you got the newer mics, you know, you start popping your peas and then you got to add a pop filter. And
you go to Home Depot and you make your own, and it was, you know.
They work great.
Exactly.
But you're always improving. So I think that's a good point.
Yeah. And I think it, I hope that it shows to the show that we take this very seriously and that, you know, we are. We thought, okay, well, we got these two microphones. We're noticing that we're popping our peas. So let's spend an afternoon hiking around the town of Bozeman looking for stuff to make these so that we can improve it and make it better. And I hope it reflects in our recordings as well.
The third one is plan everything. We talked about this. Definitely. I mean, have a vision and literally like what when Face Off is done and like the, you know, the best we can get it, what does that look like? And
yeah.
What, visualize it.
Exactly.
And then work towards it.
Yeah. Had I planned Montana Breakfast, like I said, if I had written a business plan for it, I would have realized that I have a very bad problem with split focus and indecision as to, you know, it's very ambiguous what I want to do with it. And if you have to write it down and put it on paper, it really makes it concrete for you. I know you and I have a pretty specific plan with how we want to go with Face Off. You know, we're kind of a little fuzzy on other things outside of it, but Face Off, we took it seriously. We sat down one weekend, we wrote and documented as much stuff as we can. We have procedures in place. We asked the hard questions, like what if in 2 months, you know, for whatever reason, we hate each other and have to break up the show, who retains rights, what will happen to it. There are exit strategies. You need to think about things like this too, because especially if you bring in more than one person, if you have yourself, you can kind of just, you know, slide it off and say whatever and put it as a, you know, you screwed up category. But when there's other people involved, you need to have things like an exit strategy figured out for those hard questions for what happens, what will happen if, you know, my mixer started on fire right now. Well, okay. You know, we were doing 50-50. We'd go on 50-50 on a new mixer, buy it, and just get it done because we take it very seriously. You have to have those procedures in place.
The fourth one is manage money wisely. So, you know, if your mixer's blown up, you know, we got to get a new one. But right now, everything's working. We, you know, don't need to go buy some, you know, fancy one with 20 ports for mics. We don't have 20 guests, you know.
Yeah, one of the greatest tips I had from my entrepreneurship teacher, I, for the record, I graduated from Montana State University with a bachelor of science in business management with a focus in business management. And one of the classes I had to take was entrepreneurship. He said one of the greatest tips he ever got was when people start up new businesses, they always go out and spend just tons of money on new desks with like big fancy cubicle walls and stuff. And there are office furniture warehouses in almost every town where you can get used office furniture for, you know, 1/8 of the price of this new stuff. And it's, you know, he said the one here in Bozeman specifically is this giant warehouse, and you walk in and there's just office furniture everywhere, and it's
really
dirt cheap. I mean, that's wise money spending. Take, you know, if you have a table in your house that you're not using anymore, instead of going and buying a new one from IKEA, just bring it to your office and donate it to your office. Don't spend money on stuff that you don't need to. Do you really need laptops for your office workflow, or can you buy a $300 Dell Studio Hybrid with an LCD that will work just fine for your developers? You know, think about that wisely. Think about it and really, you know, make sure you're not spending money that you don't have to.
And watch it. A lot of entrepreneurs will say, okay, I got an accountant and now I'm not looking at money ever again. You know, don't do that.
No, not at all. I mean, an accountant is a tool for you. It's not, you know, they're not, embezzlement happens. So watch your money.
I've read a few books on entrepreneurship and that one is it seems like a huge, not necessarily embezzlement, but you need to watch your money. Do it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, as we talked earlier when we were talking about Credit Karma, same with a business. Money management is an important part of it. It's not just a passive thing that happens in the background. You need to watch your money and take care of it.
Number five is ask for the sale. Sometimes you don't you advertise your product and you promote it and stuff, but you don't actually say, you know, go subscribe. Mm-hmm. You know, go do it.
Please do it right now. If you're not subscribing, please do it right now. A lot of this, we talk about, we had a really great conversation with David Walsh after our, interview with him last week. And one of the things he pointed out was he said, you know, go ask for that interview. He said, I've never turned down a single interview I've had or I've ever been offered because I don't get it offered that much at all. You think that, you know, I'd have to have a press agent, you know, it's turning down interviews all the time, but you know, one of the things that you and I are getting better at is just asking for that interview. Say, hey, can you give us a half an hour of your time And, you know, there is no harm in asking if they say no. What happens if they say no? You're in the same spot you were before you asked, and absolutely nothing has happened.
There's a great Pro Blogger article. I don't think it was written by Darren from Pro Blogger. It was somebody else, but it was a great article about asking for interviews from people. Even if you're starting out and you don't think that you could ever get that person to be an interviewer,
yeah,
try it.
Yeah, I know.
You'd be surprised.
I know you and I are we're always hounding Gary Vaynerchuk, just, you know, slipping in. I mean, he gets quite a bit of money to talk, but you never know. He might be in a weird mood one day when you DM him and say, hey, if you, you know, you ever want to interview and help out like a really small podcast, talk to us at Face Off. He might be in a weird mood to say, you know what, I'm bored of this crap every day. I'm going to go talk to these guys. And there you go. You know, there is instant traffic right there.
Definitely. Number six, remember it's all about the customer. I mean, yeah, this is like preaching to the choir. It really, really is. Some of the ways you can, you know, find out what the customers are doing or, you know, you know, use user voice, use whatever it takes, find out what they like and don't like about your podcast. You know,
yeah,
do exactly. A survey if you have to, anything, get comments.
Yeah. With that in mind, go to faceoffshow.com/feedback right now. And let us know what we can do to make the show better. I mean, I'm making the sale, and I want feedback right now. Maybe you don't like these list posts that we do for the topics. You know, that's great feedback, and we'll, you know, try and slow that down next week. I don't know. You just never know if you know, exactly. If you don't get feedback, and you have to ask it from your customer. And if you're doing a good job of being a good representative of your company, it should be okay to follow up with the customer and be like, "Hey, how's it going? You know." Was everything okay? I'm asking for honest feedback. Let them know that you're not trying to just fluff yourself up. Say, you know, I really want to improve the service I'm giving you. What could I do? What are some ideas? Let
exactly.
me know.
A book that I've read on entrepreneur called E-Myth, which I highly recommend anybody reading it if you're starting a business, is to keep track of positive and negative things. It doesn't necessarily, it could be a common email, anything. And, you know, create action around those. Actually resolve it. Don't just sit there and say, oh, you know, our customers don't like this, the way we, you know, do this little thing, and then just kind of talk about it but never do anything. Do mm-hmm. something about it.
Yeah, you know, follow up with them about it, especially if you have a record
yes.
of it. It's, I mean, like we said, again, I love Gary Vaynerchuk. He talks about it all the time. He spends hours, hours, hours every day replying to tweets, replying to every single email that comes in. And, you know, even though I know when he, you know, replies back to an email that just says, cool, thanks. I mean, it's like, that's 2 seconds he took out of his day to hit reply and say thanks. And that's cool. I mean, I know he's a busy guy, and that means even more since I know how busy he is, that he'll follow up with me, even if it's just a thanks and a smiley face, you know, that's cool. And especially when you get into a position like that, people, it gets, you know, you'll get very strong followers that really want to help you out because, you know, like if Gary Vaynerchuk wanted me to like try and DDoS Microsoft.com, I probably would because, you know, he is so cool. I've drank his Kool-Aid and I think he's awesome.
When you get into ISO 9000 stuff, they actually require you to keep a track of every customer complaint and your resolution to that complaint.
Nice.
You actually have to do something about it. So like ISO 9000, you actually have to, you know, record every customer complaint and you actually respond to it.
Wow. So, I mean, it's required to get that sort of
Yeah, you have to actually contact the customer and say, you know what, we looked at, you know, and actually did this. You know, we fixed it.
Wow.
Or, we're working on fixing it. We'll let you know when there's a resolution. You have to at least respond.
Well, again, it's. I mean, I don't like the moniker "the customer is always right," but no matter what, the customer is what's bringing your money in. Whether or not they're right, and from there, you have to handle it how you think you should handle it. I'm a huge proponent of like responsibility and, you know, being responsible for your actions. So even if a customer, you know, does something that you don't agree with, say, hey, thank you for the suggestion. This is why we won't be doing this. You know, if someone said on Face Off that we should have a section where we talk about, you know, the current Playboy swimsuit issue or, you know, Sports Illustrated swimsuit issue, you know, I would say, thanks for the suggestion. That doesn't really fit the content of our show, but
right.
We appreciate the feedback. Thank you. So the next one, number seven, is become a shameless self-promoter without becoming obnoxious, of course, which is the caveat to that.
Yeah, a lot of times people are like, ashamed or embarrassed to promote their own stuff. I know I was a little bit at the beginning.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, I mean, you got to do it. Don't be obnoxious. But anytime, you know, if somebody says, "Oh, this is a cool web app," you know, I sometimes respond and say, "Hey, yeah, it is cool. We talked about it on our show, and you know, we talk about web apps like this. If you're interested,
yeah, exactly.
Anytime I get a chance that's not obnoxious, I try to promote the things I do.
Yeah, I try and I mean, without being like, sometimes at work we'll talk about something. And I'm like, I don't want to be like, you know. just so you know, on episode 12, we talked about this. I just say like, oh yeah, we looked at that in Face Off, and it's really cool. I think you guys should check it out. Or I'll be like, oh man, we talked about something really similar to this in Face Off. Let me go and you know, even to my coworkers, which they know I do it, but you never know, someone else might pick up on it and say like, oh, well, what's this Face Off? And I could say, hey, it's a web technology podcast I do with Mark Sanborn. So, you know, but don't become obnoxious. I mean, one thing I would like to get for us even is I'd like maybe even like some polo t-shirts with our logo embroidered on it or something really, you know, classy but not obnoxious about it, so that if to make it maybe a conversation piece, if people are like, oh, hey, what's that? You can say, oh, well, my podcast I do.
The next one is have a positive business image.
Yeah.
You know, project it out like...
Exactly. I mean, like you said, if you don't feel 100% about it, people can get that. And so the same thing here. If you think it's shaky, people will get that when you talk to them. I mean, you need to know that, you know, you're trying to get your business going. You're really excited about it. Show off that passion. Give them that energy that you have. Because if you don't have that energy, you probably shouldn't be doing it and it might fail.
One of the things in eMyth is they say you're not selling a product. You're selling a business image. Literally every single thing about your image affects you, down to the uniforms, the colors on your uniforms, whether or not you've got your logo on your sock. You know, the UPS guys have their logos on the guys' socks. Yeah. I mean,
do you answer your phone, Face Off Studio? Exactly. This is Jade. Yep. Or do you answer it like Face Off Studio? This is Jade. How can I help you?
Is your, desks clean when people show up? But you know, is your office clean? Do you got, you know, that kind of thing. Do you got clutter laying around?
Exactly. When you come, I mean, and this is a problem sometimes with people who have home businesses, you know, they think they can work all day loafing around in their pajamas and stuff. But sometimes, you know, getting up, taking a shower, you know, doing your hair really nice, putting on a nice shirt and pants, even if you're working at home, that gives you that more of that image that you can project to other people. Even if you're on the phone, you'll feel more professional. You'll feel ready to go. You'll feel like you're part of something that's going to end up being something big someday. So you'll show that to your customers in every communication you have with them.
A company that does this really well is Apple. Their stores are just, I mean, it's definitely, they've chosen a better image over functionality. Like, what was the glass box in New York?
Yeah, exactly. At the store, it's just,
and they have like only a few computers, but it's like really clean, and it's like all about the image.
Yeah, exactly.
It makes a big difference.
Yeah, so. I mean, Apple. Every single Apple computer has an Apple logo on the top that is glowing, and you know, I agree completely. Number nine is get to know your customers. We talked a little bit about this earlier. You know, call them up, ask for feedback, let them know. I mean, ask them instead of just saying, hey, was my product good? Say, hey, what exactly is the problem you're trying to solve with my product? And maybe I can modify my project or my product to help you solve that problem better. This is where things like social media, like Twitter and Facebook, can really come in handy, because you can see not only the buzz about your product, but if someone, you know, if someone is like, man, I really wish that Face Off Show was, you know, another hour long, because, you know, I'm trying to do something, you know.
Or maybe we have a lot of listeners that love open source and they want the OGG format versus MP3. And they want, you know.
Oh, exactly. Like, I love Face Off, but, you know, I really don't like MP3. I like OGG. Then it's like, okay. That's useful information. My customers are a lot of open source people, so I should embrace that by doing open source formats.
Yep. And, you know, and we would try to respond to them, and we would say, hey, you know, thanks for the comment. Maybe right now we don't have the bandwidth to do it yet, but we'll definitely look into it if more people, you know, start suggesting it, or maybe we'll just do it, you know, it'll depend on the data we get.
Maybe in the news and follow-ups we talk about it a little bit, and we say, you know, you send us some feedback if you really think we should do this in OGG format as well as MP3.
Level the playing field with technology. So, I mean, this stuff like Twitter, we can get our message out real fast versus, you know, For example, okay, here's a good example. You know, we're doing a radio show. In the past, you would have to go to like a radio company and you'd have to, you know, buy time,
pitch
to,
it, know,
and yep. pitch it. With the internet, with technology, we're leveling the playing field and saying we can do a video. We're
publishing this ourselves.
We're publishing it ourselves. We can podcast all we want. There's nothing you can do.
Yeah, exactly. So. You know, if I want to do consulting, normally in the past I would have to have some papers written about it or published in academic journals, like business journals, or you know, a book or two to do in consulting. Well, now I can say, you know, I can send people to my blog, and they can basically, I'm self-publishing my content. They can go out and they can look at it and say, you know, this guy has the same vision that we wanna get in our company, so we can hire him, and here he is.
There's this cool open source project that they're trying to get into the TV spec, actually implement it in TVs. And basically what it'll be is like you can have channels on your TV over the internet. Mm-hmm. So you basically hook up your TV to the internet. And basically what that will do eventually is you can have any channel like over the internet. So you won't have to go through like ABC or NBC and try to get your show on that. So, mm-hmm. I mean, it's basically leveling it and saying it's breaking down the barriers to entry.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's a good example.
It used to be, it was really, really expensive to do business overseas for things, even things like phone calls and stuff like that. But now, you know, we talked about Google Voice, you've got Skype, you got VoIP out there. You can go do it. You can, you know, you could cold call companies in Japan if you wanted to and try and get some business there for, you know, relatively cheap, where it used to be only the big behemoths were able to do that.
11 is build a top-notch business team. I know, you know, we've both read Rich Dad Poor Dad, and he recommends getting a team together and
getting, you know,
sometimes you just can't do it by yourself, whether it's development or accounting, or, you know, sometimes it's going to get to the point where it's too much. You just can't take it all on yourself.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, thinking about it, people think if you want an accountant, then you have to hire an accountant that's going to come sit in your office every day. I mean, accountants, you could even give an accountant sort of like almost like a lawyer's retainer for advice. You just say, you know, call them up, ask them, you know, they're a professional part of your team. They don't have to be doing the day-to-day work or anything like that. But, you know, I mean, I can try and make legal decisions, but, you know, before I sign a contract, maybe I should just send it off to my lawyer so he can do 10 minutes of work and then take it off of my retainer that I paid him. And I know I'm being good. I know I'm being secure, and I'm not going to do something that might come back to bite me in the rear later.
One thing I would recommend after reading eMyth would be to make the procedures and the documentation before you hire this person. So to give you an example, like let's say we got so busy in our production that we just couldn't do the post-production, mm-hmm. And we had to hire somebody to do that. Mm-hmm. It would be better for us to have all the documentation of what we currently do and then give it to him and say, here, do this.
Yeah.
Rather than saying, here, we need post, and then you go do it. Because if you do that, he could just make, you know, we've gone through mistakes. We've had backup problems. You know, we've had some mm-hmm. issues that we've learned from. And if we documented it, all of our things that we learned from are transferred to him now. So yeah. He doesn't have to relearn from the mistakes.
Yeah, exactly. And then we know that we're hiring a person to do audio engineering, not writing the post or, mm-hmm. you know, putting the links through the thing.
It's very specific.
You know, or if we do put that in that job, then we say when they come on, they say, okay, well, part of your job of post-production is to prepare the, you know, the blog post with all the links and the times in it as well. And a person then could make, you know, they don't want to get hired to do audio engineering and they come in and be like, well, I'm not your secretary. I'm not going to write it. I'm here to do good audio. If you have that prepared ahead of time, they can look at it and say, you know, they're prepared. It's not going to be a surprise and you might not fight with them later about it.
Number 12 is become known as an expert. Gary Vaynerchuk talks about this all the time. Be, you know, an expert in your field. If you're talking about web technology and web apps, we should know the latest web apps.
Exactly.
You know,
and again, the problem I have, and I think a lot of people have this, you know, I currently work at Montana State University. I work with a ton of programmers who spend a lot of time on the web. I hang out with you, who is also, you know, a web technology expert. For some reason, I always think I'm not an expert because there are just as many smart people around me. But there are plenty of companies and people out there who aren't an expert. I mean, think of how many things you know you're not an expert on. You know, a great example is, you know, legal stuff, accounting,
right.
You know, and realize that those people live and breathe that as much as you do what you do. So recognize yourself as an expert. Don't be so squeamish about it. Like, oh, I don't know. You know, if you're doing consulting or something and someone asks you a question, think about it, give them the best answer with confidence, knowing that you've thought about it, knowing the technology out there and knowing the knowledge of that realm and you having it inside of you.
A personal reflection. So Linux, I like Linux. I use it in, so I use it, but as soon as I said I want to make a community article-based, you know, blog about it, I've learned more in just the last like dozen articles about Linux that I've ever known about Linux in the last like 4 years of using it.
Mm-hmm.
When you make that determination, say I want to become an expert now,
mm-hmm.
it changes everything.
Yeah.
I learned exactly. more in the last just dozen articles than 4 years of Linux.
So. Yeah. I mean, I thought I knew about a lot of the new, you know, web apps and startups out there until we started doing this show, and I had to actively seek them out. It was before mm-hmm. it was sort of a poll system. I had a couple websites I did, you know, I listened to coworkers and stuff, but when it was time to say, okay, well, you know, it's time to hit the books, you know, we look at web apps critically and I say, you know, we reject quite a few web apps that we find. We think, oh, this is great. And we click on it. We look at it and we go, nah, I don't want to talk about it on the show.
Yeah. Or even it sounds good and we try it and it's like, yeah,
they're not implementing it well. Yeah.
It didn't work how you kind of said it did.
Exactly. And so, I mean, it's, you know, become an expert in that and really dive into it in your spare time.
Number 14 is invest in yourself. You know, this is like, you know, buy books, buy things that are going to help with your brand, whether it's going to be hiring someone for a professional logo design for your own, you know.
Exactly.
You know.
Yeah.
Like we have those, you know, avatars.
Our
we
did by portraits. Ourself.
Yep. We could have, you know, to help our brand image, we could have maybe hired out to get that if we didn't know how to do that or, mm-hmm. you know. Buy books, invest in your expertise, you know, go buy books in your area. Go to this is a good example. Go to the, trade shows,
conventions,
yep. conventions. So,
yeah, exactly. I mean, with my schooling and stuff like that, I felt like that, I had enough information to be financially responsible and hopefully become a good entrepreneur in the future. But, you know, that doesn't, and I still can go on the internet and find articles and stuff like that. But it came to the point where I said, you know, Jade, you're going to have to buy some books. You're going to have to spend some money and you're going to have to spend the time to sit down and read them, because you can only skim so many articles on the internet and think you know what you know. But there's, you know, people invest a lot of time in books. And so I was like, well, you know, it's just time to go out, open up the wallet and, you know, watch the moths fly out, but buy some books and sit down and crush it.
Or get an audio book and pod ship it. Then you can do twice as many. Or zap reader.
Oh, goodness.
Number 15 is be accessible.
Mm-hmm. They can't be reluctant to come forward to you. Even if it's, you know, someone just asking you a general question, you need to be, you know, show them that you'll take the time to give them the attention that they need and in any way that they feel fit. My problem is I hate the telephone, so I'm really hoping to get a Google Voice invite pretty soon, because that really sort of lubricates a lot of the problems that I have with the telephone. So right now, if someone calls me, I'll talk to them, but I'm not as comfortable with it. Well, I need to make myself more accessible on the phone, and so I need to either get tools or work with myself to become better at that.
We're both kind of not really morning people, but we had to do an interview, you know, earlier in the morning, and we're just like, okay, sure.
Wake up early. That, I tell you.
We got to be accessible. You know, if we've got an international interviewee and, you know, we want to get him on the show really bad, you know, we're going to stay up in the wee hours of the night to get him on, or whatever we have to do to be accessible to get it on.
Yeah, exactly. Number 16 is build a rock solid reputation. And this is important. I talk about this a lot. Integrity, holding yourself responsible for your actions. Like even if you, you know, if you have shortcomings, be forward with them and tell them about how you're trying to overcome that, because that builds a really good reputation. People will trust you. They say, you know, recently I've been looking at properties around Bozeman, because I think I kind of would like to get into real estate investing. And I met with a couple brokers, and they're like, you know, this house is beautiful. Look at this great floor, you know? And then I went and talked to this one lady, and the first thing she said was like, yeah, I mean, this place is going to need some work. It's not great. But right now this part of the town is it's expanding this way. I think is probably worth more in a while. Plus there's commercial opportunities. And immediately I was drawn to that lady, because I thought, you know, she is speaking the language that I am
comfortable with
and that I'm comfortable with. And I, you know, I really love honesty. I don't want someone to smile and say, this is the perfect house for you. I want them to say, you know, this is a good house. Here are its problems, and this is how you can fix it.
With the speed of which word of mouth goes, your integrity is everything on the internet. You know, we see things like, you know, Gary, we all screw up. You know, yep. A great example for us, one of our like idols, I guess, is Leo Laporte, you know, had an episode on one of his shows where he kind of got a little bit angry. And the next day, you know, it was kind of a, he rectified it.
He went with it. He rolled with it. You know, he rolled with the punches. He said, I'm sorry. And he was playing some of the internet, you know, remixes and memes that people had made on the internet. He said, you know, I screwed up, and screw ups can be a pain in the butt, but they happen. So don't sit and dwell over it, and don't try and hide it. That's the other thing. I mean, I wouldn't go meet a new potential customer and be like, first thing, he's like, I'm Jade. I don't like mornings, and sometimes I procrastinate, you know. But I'm going to say, like, you know, I'll try and get up in the morning for you, especially if you need me. I'm really trusted like that. If I know I have to be awake in the morning, as we saw with David Walsh, I'll get up and I'll get it done. You know, but build that reputation. Part of the, I think for me, what I like, from people is honesty. So I think if they have a reputation for being honest, that's very, very important to me.
Number 17 is, sell benefits. You know, don't just describe, I mean,
just don't pump features, pump why features or attributes, pump why those are going to help them out. Why, you know, what is good about that? Don't just be like, I mean, you can go to any website and be like, this site has analytics for your short URLs. Well, no, say it has analytics for your short URLs, which will help you make sure you're targeting the right people in social media that you need to, and not wasting your time and losing money.
That's a good point. Instead of saying, you know, we can track all this data, like clicks, clicktails. Oh, you can see what they're moving around their mouse. But no, it should be saying, you know, we can show you where people are moving around into the point where you can move things, and the user will have a better user experience.
Yeah,
I guess exactly. That's the benefit. You know.
Yeah, exactly. Not just the feature or
increase
the
user satisfaction.
Yeah, exactly. Number 18 is get involved. This is really important. Gary Vaynerchuk, as we said, talks about this a lot. You know, becoming an expert in your field requires getting involved. Go out to blogs that are, you know, in that field that you're working on, and partake in their conversation as well. Become an expert in there. Give useful feedback. And within that, you know, people will notice you. They'll say, wow, you know, this Jade Robbins guy has been giving some really interesting comments on gaming. Oh, and he has a website. And then click on it, and they're like, oh, well, there's a ton of interesting commentary on all this stuff that's going on.
Yeah, you know, check out your associations, your local communities, go to trade shows, go to conventions, comment on other people's blogs, comment on Twitter, reply on Twitter, retweet people that you think are worthy.
Yep, spend some time on it. You have to.
19 is grab attention. You know, we can't really, you know, especially small businesses, when you're starting off with entrepreneurial, you know, you can't just spend, you know, millions of dollars on advertising and just, you know, screw it up. I mean, you...
I can't remember what Jason Kalkanakis, or I can never say his last name. He's always on Twitter. He started Mahalo. He's kind of a serial entrepreneur. One thing he talked about is he says that every company should have like a... I can't remember what he called it. It was like a gray horse CEO or something like that. It's like a CEO that has either interesting things or, you know, eccentric things about them that get them in the news, because people love that sort of thing. So, you know, maybe one of the things I might roll with is that, you know, we love Dog the Bounty Hunter. I don't know if you, our listeners, know this, but when Mark and I record Face Off, we will probably sit and watch 2 to 3 hours of Dog the Bounty Hunter every weekend, because it gets us fired up, and it's really... kind of a depressing addiction, but we absolutely love it. So, you know, it's little things. It makes you more memorable. You're not only promoting a company. There's something that white flags like that people remember. You know, if you're like, oh, he's the guy CEO of that company that does that thing. You're like, and you're like, oh, but he's the guy that watches, you know, that comes with the Dog the Bounty Hunter shirt to every convention.
Yeah.
Oh, that guy. Yeah. That's a good point, he did that come. You know, it just little things. And again, it's not. I'm not saying be crazy and go be stupid. But
no.
But. Really embrace yourself. What are you? You know, Gary Vaynerchuk loves the Jets. He goes to the NFL draft and is on TV about 4 times, because every time the TV sweeps by, he's freaking out and grabbing his Jets jersey and like yelling like crazy. And I mean, that's, you'll never forget him for that.
You did justice on that one. That was great. We're probably the only technology podcast that loves Dog the Bounty Hunter, you know.
You know, brah. Don't be smoking that ice, brah.
Number 20, master the art of negotiations.
This is a one that takes a lot of work. It's really hard to do. I'm not really that great at it. To be honest with you, I'm not good at negotiating, and it's something I should work on.
Yeah. A good book that I recommend is How to Win... what is it called?
Like 7 ways to win an argument every time, or
yeah, it's put out by one of the Ivy League universities. MIT or one of them. We'll get it for you.
Yeah, we'll post in the show notes. But there's
it's a great book about how to win negotiations, and it's not always about it's basically what can I give the other person? What does he want? It's all about getting down to what does he want and what do I want up front. Sometimes it's not always clear.
Yeah, really, a compromise, when you say the word compromise, it means that each side loses equally. Mm. And really, the best way, you don't want a compromise, you want I can't remember the word for it, it's like, you want a conclusion. You want something that satisfies both sides fully. And usually, a lot of times, it's just a communication barrier to figure that out. So people tend to just kind of meet in the middle and say, oh, it's a compromise, whatever. But if you can meet both goals creatively, then both people win. You know, a compromise means that both sides lose. There's either one side completely wins, or the other side completely wins, or both side loses an equal amount. Or if you talk it out, you'll find a way that both sides can win. Get it really what they want, not what they're saying they want. What is the benefit? Can I get a benefit to both sides, not just the feature?
Yeah, one of the points is you'll sometimes be going back and forth about a certain idea or topic, and then when you really get down to it and you really figure out what the root of it is, you guys are arguing about something that doesn't even matter. You guys are not, you're both, your goal in the end is not what you're arguing about.
Yep, exactly.
And what the book suggests is to get down to that, and it makes you win every time, basically.
Exactly. 21 is design your workspace for success. Again, like you talked about, make sure it works with your flow, do it the way you need. If everything is messy and disorganized, then your head will also be messy and disorganized, I think. But some people also like a lot of clutter. I mean, I like a lot of little things on my desk. Some people don't, but, make sure it's how you want it.
Number 22, get and stay organized. And definitely with the speed of which things move and the information that we receive every day, you need to, email, for example, you'll be getting 30 emails a day or 50 or 100, depending. You got to have a strategy of reducing those emails and getting through everything, getting organized.
One thing you and I talked about, and we're both planning on doing, is getting a document scanner so that, every bill that comes in, scan it and put it online. Then you have that record of it. You're not cluttering up with a bunch of paper that can get lost everywhere. But then again, make sure you have a backup solution for your electronic copies of everything. But if you're, if you have a secure workspace, scan everything into a document copier, save yourself that clutter and be organized about it. Then you can, with like Google Desktop or whatever, you can search your hard drive for files and index it. Index your bills, things like that. That's a great idea.
So if you weren't organized and you promised, like let's say we promised something on our show, like, oh, we'll put that in the show notes and then we never do, that doesn't look good on us. So, that's organization right there.
Yep, exactly. Number 23 is take time off. For some reason, Americans compared to the rest of the world, we take a lot less time vacation than the rest of the world. Some people maybe that's why we've, why we have such a high GDP growth for the past X years. But either way, don't burn yourself out. Passion is important, but you can easily get so passionate you'll burn yourself out and not want to do it anymore. So take time, even if it's just time off where you're, you take a day where you're not going to answer email, you're not going to answer any phone calls or anything. Take some time off and relax and do something that will help you recharge.
Number 24, limit the number of hats you wear. This is a big one. If you got 20 different projects and you're trying to work on one and you're, over the place.
Especially as an entrepreneur, one really good tip is to think of all the positions that you want inside your company. And even if when you first start out, if you fill out your org chart, you're filling every position, know that position's duties. And then when time does come, when you grow enough, you'll have everything ready there to hire someone into that position. So you don't have to wear that hat anymore. So, a lot of entrepreneurs, they try to wear way too many hats. They try to be the accountant. They try to be the manager. They try to be the, the supervisor. But if you have all this planned out ahead of time, like if you say, okay, I'm going to have a core programming team with one supervisor, an accountant, and then me, and then, you have those duties planned out, when time comes, when you have enough money to hire that position, you can just hire and take that hat off and throw it away.
Number 25, follow up consistently or constantly. Sorry. You know, we talked about this before we started this segment. You got to follow up, got to follow through.
You got to follow up with your customers. You got to follow up within your own company. You got to follow up with your actions. Always review everything you do and see if you can improve it. Well, that, I, you know, honestly, we didn't, we're not going to get a chance to get to the 10 reasons you are not a successful entrepreneur. But I have an idea that one of our future episodes, the topic will be things to avoid, as a new entrepreneur. So we'll get to that later. We're sorry we didn't get to it this show, but, we're pretty long winded today, it seems. But that about wraps it up for this episode of Face Off. I want to remind everybody that you can subscribe to the show by going to faceoffshow.com/subscribe. You can leave feedback for the show by going to faceoffshow.com/feedback. There you can submit web apps, topics, links. I mean, anything you would like us to see and maybe talk about on the show, we appreciate it. Or any improvements or ideas to the show. Like Mark and I, we're really important, or we really believe in feedback. So we'd like feedback from you and from ourselves. And we will see you guys next week. Thanks for listening.
Thanks, guys.